Welcome to the 65th Monk I'm About podcast. Contact us at monkcast@gmail.com with comments, contributions and Christmas e-cards. In the pod, we discuss our spinning orders and anything else that takes our eye, ask you for submissions to our Review of the Year show, and in the spotlight, it's Tintin time again. This week, James discusses the broken ear. Momcast, the audio equivalent to Christmas shopping. Around the mic tonight are...
Hi, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Nick.
And hi, I'm Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you for asking. And yourself?
Okay, I've gotten over my sneezing fit, so I think I'm okay now.
You had a terrible sneezing fit earlier. We'd say bless you a lot.
Yes.
It was dreadful.
Do you think I'm blessed for life now?
You are blessed for life.
The listener might hear a weird noise.
Yeah, sorry about that. That'd be me.
No, I was just... there was something attached that might be giving some static, so I've sorted it.
Oh, thank you for that, Nick.
Well done. Okay. Shake your hand.
I should have let it go without saying anything. Thank you, James.
Yeah, that's okay.
Technical
your
prize.
Hand's all clammy.
Oh, sorry.
Are you a bit sneezy? Have you been sneezing?
Oh, yeah,
I've
actually just sneezed my hand.
Brilliant.
You've both touched
that. I was going to say your technical prowess is unmatched, Nick, but...
But my ability to mask said prowess is...
Funny because... Marvel.
What's this? What did you just find on the floor?
I don't know.
This is terrible. I haven't tidied up at all here.
No.
Oh, it was a preview screening to Tron Legacy in 3D, which I didn't go to see. I haven't seen it.
Really?
You got off it.
It was. It would have invalidated a colleague's Sky thing if I went, so I decided not to go. I should have done that. I didn't care.
That makes no actual sense at all to
me.
And I don't really think I've got the time nor inclination to listen to you tell us something.
That was funny because you were mean to me.
That funny because Marvel.
But talking about Tron, Tron is released in the UK this Friday, tomorrow.
This Friday and tomorrow?
Just this Friday, as in tomorrow.
Blimey. I haven't,
Which is the 17th of December, listener.
I haven't seen it yet, because it isn't out yet.
No.
But I have heard reviews of it, and apparently it's pretty, but a little bit boring.
Do you know what? I get the impression I'm more likely to see... Meet the Fockers, Little Fockers, before I am
no,
Tron.
No, don't go
really?
And see that, because that'll
well,
be
no,
shit.
I want to take Nikki, my wife, out for a sort of a date movie night. We want to get a babysitter in for Scarlett. And the last time we went to see a Focker film, there was a woman sat behind us with who I hope was her son, because otherwise I don't even want to think about the dynamic of that relationship. And the whole way through it, every time anything of any note happened, she went, oh, look at that, oh. The whole way through the film, it was really...
Are you hoping you're the same age you'll be there for this one?
I'm hoping I'm praying she will, because she made that film for me.
There,
to the point where Nikki and I bought the DVD, and we watch the DVD occasionally, and sit there the whole way through and just go, oh, look at that.
There was a bit in the trailer where he's in a ball pit. There's a whole thing in a ball pit that looked amusing, but I got the sneaking suspicion that was the funny bit.
Oh, it'd be fuck awful, I imagine, but I'm still going to go and see it.
I think Robert De Niro is probably getting some work done on his house.
Do you think?
I think that's possibly what the Focker films are all about. Bought an extension with the last one, is getting the West Wing wallpapered with De Niro.
What, the White House?
No, he'll have a wing of his house that's to the west of the property.
Will it have Martin Sheen in it?
No, because that's the White House. Martin Sheen is in the White House.
What about Alan Alda?
Alan Alda, that's... You're spoiling the last season. I haven't seen the last season yet.
Oh, spoilers. What about Adam... No, Alan Alda.
Alan Alda, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know. Is he in the White House?
Yeah, I think he's the president in the last series.
No, shut up. I hate you.
How long has it been?
10 years.
I know, but I'm waiting for my wife to get through them so I can watch it. It's all right. Rubbish. It hasn't been 10 years. It's been less than that. You're both fools.
Mm.
Actually, it has been nearly 10 years, because they had a September 11th special, and that was only really notable after the 2001 September 11th. Doesn't really, they don't really have special stop the press episodes for subsequent September 11th.
No,
not generally. Okay. I've had a bit of a weird week.
Yes,
it's probably not worth going into. Oh no, the weekend was nice. We had a pretend Christmas on Saturday with some friends of ours, and we had roast chicken, which was nice. But someone else made it, which was nicer.
Yeah.
And then I met some friends to walk a dog.
Yes.
To walk the dogs on
Sunday. I met friends to walk dogs on Sunday too. It was nice.
It was good. But I'm ready for Christmas.
I am too. I've only got Monday left at work before I'm off for Christmas. Ooh. Which I'm cock-a-hoop about.
Cock-a-hoop. Oh, I've been watching lots of The Smoking Room as well, which has been nice to get back into. Which was a gift from a friend of ours.
Lovely. We've been watching something, haven't we?
We watched The Walking Dead.
We watched the
finale.
The finale last night.
What?
I don't know what the problem is with that. It was all right, wasn't
it? Yeah, we enjoyed it.
Someone we know said it was a jump the shark moment, but I don't.
Who says jump the shark?
Someone we knew claimed that it was the show had jumped the shark. I did not see a shark or a jump.
The jump the shark is one of those phrases that actually annoys me, because it's just everyone's looking for the jump the shark moment.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's six episodes in.
Yeah.
I think the final episode and the last 10 minutes of the previous episode are massively tonally different and feel like a completely different show from the rest of it. But not jump the shark.
I think they're
only one episode.
I think they're tonally different.
You can't.
I don't think they're massively tonally different, and I don't think they're massively different.
You can't. I haven't finished.
No, I know, but I was interjecting.
Interjecting?
Yeah.
Stomping on my balls.
Yeah, well, I might in a minute if you say anything disparaging about it.
I can't remember what I was going
to
say.
Because your opinion is not valid.
You can't, what was it, six episodes? You can't have, after six episodes, if one of those six episodes.
Yeah.
Happens to be a little bit, even if one of those episodes is absolute trash, which it by no means was, but even if one of those episodes is trash, that's not jumping the shark. That's like, at this point, that's a, what's the mathematics, that's a six.
It's a six.
What's that in percent?
That's what, about 20%?
It must be about 20%,
20%, 18%.
Approximately 18%. That's like 18% of the show. At this point in time, you could not say that. Because
no, it must be 20%. I'm an idiot.
Strictly speaking, that might be what they've got. In, you know, maybe they've always wanted that. Mm. Maybe that's what the show is. Maybe that's what they've wanted the show to be all along. Mm. And then the next series 16, might be all like that. 16%. At which point,
how many episodes were there?
Six.
At which point, The Walking Dead was always a little bit like 24.
Yeah.
And the first five episodes were the anomaly, you know?
You've sent me in a mathematical tailspin. I'm really struggling.
It's confusing.
It's nice for me to expose my mathematical idiocy.
It should be noted that our friend James and I, by no means necessarily, it wasn't him who said about jumping the shark,
was it? Yeah.
That doesn't sound like the sort of thing he'd say.
Yeah.
I know he wasn't that impressed, but that was mainly because he and 16%.
I got there in the end, didn't I?
We G'd each other up about it a little bit, I think. We got excited making jokes. We were riffing. That's what the youngsters do. We were riffing.
Yeah.
Off the gag. That's what we were doing.
I directed him at this week's Comic Critics comic blog.
What did those have to say?
They were just being slightly snooty about people slagging off The Walking Dead.
After
six episodes of really entertaining, well-written, well-acted, beautifully shot television. Apart from, admittedly, the special effects at the end of the sixth episode did have me laughing up my sleeve a little bit. But apart from that,
look, here's what it is. Yeah, I loved 24.
I love you.
I love you too. I love 24, and I love CSI and all of those things. Yeah. All I'm saying is that the first five episodes were paced and like, not realistic, but they were paced and presented in a sort of an almost HBO-esque manner. They were that kind of series. And the last episode was more like something from Fox or CBS or whoever it is who do CSI. It was like quite... When the rest of it had been all about human engagement and stuff, the last episode... We're going off the point.
We are. We liked it.
Yeah.
And I liked it, but with reservations.
Okay, that's fine.
I don't think there was anything about a shark. There wasn't a single moment of sharks, a shark. No, there wasn't a zombie shark. Was there?
That would be so fucking cool.
Awesome. That would be cool.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for the next series. I've not read The Walking Dead, so fingers crossed.
There, I'm pretty sure there isn't a zombie shark in the series, so that would mark a real departure and a very brave move.
Yeah.
For there to now be zombie sharks that go through the sky.
Oh, flying zombie sharks.
There was, this comes back to comics a little bit, because in the second issue...
Wearing American football helmets.
In the second issue of the Eagle, the relaunched Eagle in the 1980s...
Yes, I remember.
Fully painted colour Dan Dare story in the middle. Yeah. He was being chased by a shark that was floating through the air. It was an assassin and it was trying to eat him.
Did it have an American football helmet on?
No, I don't think American football existed in the 1980s.
Oh no, it bloody well did.
Not at the beginning of the 1980s.
No, it did. It was 82 when, I think, was it?
When it got invented.
When Channel 4 started showing it, which meant that's when it was invented.
When did what did the Americans play before that? Did they play soccer?
Hacky sack.
Hacky sack.
Yeah.
But that's surely not a competitive sport, is it?
Exactly. It's only at 82 they got competitive. Like, Reaganomics had really got into their brains.
Up till that point, they were all like hippies.
They were. They were playing hacky sack, hate Ashbury, whatever it's called.
I liked it better.
Yeah, it was a simpler time, wasn't it?
Oh. But American football did bring us one of my favourite films, which is The Last Boy Scout. No. Yeah, The Last Boy Scout. I really liked that. Good. I had a scary moment there where I thought I was saying The Last Action Hero, which I don't think is anyone's favourite film. But, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
What have you been doing, Jane?
I had my wax Christmas party on Friday night.
Ooh, was that good? Was there a dodgem?
Yep.
Were you running people over?
Yep.
Well, you weren't there, were you, James?
No, I went home to my family.
But so there was no dodgem racing for you. What did you run over anyone important?
Probably.
Did you look to help anybody?
I was purposely mowing people down. Dodgem was not in my vocabulary in that car. Vocabulary.
Okay.
I think you said it right both times.
Oh, I think Blake Edwards has passed.
Blake Edwards?
Yeah.
It's another person who... That's very sad.
Yeah.
But that's another person who I wasn't sure that they were still alive.
No, and quite old, but you know, live celebrity death on the pod this week.
Oh, man, that's depressing.
Dies at 88. Complications from pneumonia, apparently.
Oh. Before Christmas. That is
very sad. Oh, man, I love the Pink Panther films.
Yeah.
I have them in a box set at home. I will watch a Pink Panther movie tonight.
Oh, I ruined Christmas for my wife as well. That was something I did today, which I feel very guilty about. I actually do feel really guilty about that. Stop me and ask me about that story if you see me in the street. I feel really guilty about it. But you didn't hurt. You didn't actually kill anyone with the dodgems.
You should report that story.
I just made lots of girls go ee.
You made lots of girls go ee. This is like, no, never mind.
No, not in a good way. They looked at me really pissed off. I'm like, well, you're in my way.
Yeah, what are they doing walking around in this stupid high heels on the dodgem? You were still on that thing with the floor that's special for dodgems. You didn't break out of the dodgem thing.
Well, I was wearing a dress and high heels, all I managed to find. Yeah. I was in a car all my own a couple of times as well. I did share with one of my colleagues and we both went on some weird rampage of bumping into everyone.
Was that our colleague Scene?
Yes, it was.
I like Scene.
He was good company.
Is his name Scene?
Yeah.
Is that like a nickname?
No.
Oh.
And yeah, the other fun fair attractions there, it was okay. The food was okay.
Were there any slightly grubby men with facial tattoos looking after the rides?
No.
Oh, not exactly like a fairy.
Were there any flying zombie sharks with American football helmets?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
I'm still not sure where a shark could wear a helmet.
Well, it's kid head.
Yeah, but they can't get it over there. A helmet goes over a head.
It's got a chin strap.
But it just sat on top of the shark's head.
With the chin strap.
That doesn't even make any sense.
He's got one made specially for him.
Can shark. It can wear whatever it likes.
But it won't give it any head protection.
Don't need it. He just wears it. It's like an affectation.
it's just a dandy shark.
Exactly. Not really a dandy. No, it's not more really a tough. Dandy.
Yeah, I suppose.
And it's showing it's a tough by wearing an American football helmet.
Could this shark beat up Sharky or George?
No.
No.
No one can defeat James Sharky and George.
No, I don't really know. I know the names. I don't really know who these Sharky...
Well, Sharky, he's Sharky a shark. And
yeah, so what's George?
And George is a fish. Is a fish, and they're the crime busters of the yeah. sea.
I sound like a pair of twats.
You're going to sing the theme tune?
Sharky and George, the crime busters of the sea. Do-do-do-do-do. Sharky and George, they'll go down in history, I think.
I think it was something like that. They'll solve your mystery. Or
they'll solve your mystery. They won't go down in history. Obviously, James hasn't ever heard of them.
Aren't they sort of encroaching on Aquaman's patch?
No.
No, because he was in the American DC ocean, and I believe they were French.
What would happen if... Oh, no, never mind.
Sharky and George used to be on Channel 4s in the morning after Inspector Gadget. Mm.
I was about to hypothesise probably the most tedious thing that's ever come out of my mouth.
Really?
I'm not even going to go there.
How do you differentiate?
What would happen, do you think, if Aquaman and the Submariner were to meet? Can you imagine what would happen if they were to meet?
Is that what you were going to say, but thought better of saying?
Yeah, because I thought, shit, that's a mundane thing to do.
Luckily,
yeah.
some incredibly nerdy English stereotype walked in
and
got it out there for you.
Thanks for that nerdy stereotype. That's my pleasure.
Now, leave.
Go. So James can talk about his comics.
Should I talk about my comics?
Yeah.
I think you should rescue yourself.
Okay, so this week I'm going to talk about Batman. No, I'm joking.
That me then clapping, that was supposed to be the door closing. It didn't really work the way I was expecting it
would
to.
Would have worked if you hadn't have brought
it. Do you think it wouldn't? Yeah. I'll cut that out, it's alright.
I bought Strange Tales 2, issue 3 of 3. Funny, because Marvel.
Okay.
Which is, I assume most of you listening will be familiar with Strange Tales. It's a series of offbeat takes of Marvel comic characters. Isn't it, Nick? Agree with me.
Yes, I was just seeing if, because they did something a few years back. Oh no, I might be getting it mixed up with DC's Bizarro Tales, which is similar.
Yes.
But yes, offbeat, and they've got like indie alternative-y people doing the stories. Ooh.
What?
No, I thought I recognised an artist. Yes, I'll have a look at it.
I was going to say it's hit and miss. That's not entirely fair. It wasn't hit and miss at all. It was hit. I didn't get to read some of them because your wife was listening to the Stone Roses Greatest Hits and I was too busy singing along with the Stone Roses I was having the right little sing-song. It's good.
Do we have a proper styly karaoke bar anywhere in Southampton? You know the ones with the booths where you can go in and close the door and you're there with your mate?
No.
That'd be ace, wouldn't it? I'd love a place.
Maybe that's what you and I should do next year when we jack in our stupid fucking jokes.
Yeah, it's funny because it's tragic.
Fucking stupid jobs. Maybe, so anyway, I tell you what, if I get made redundant last year, that'll be our start-up capital. We'll open up a proper karaoke.
If you get made redundant last year.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, excellent. Time.
It'll have a no arsehole rule on the door.
Yes, absolutely.
And little booths where people can go in and get giggly and sing songs to each other.
You're invited for free, listener.
Yeah, you are. You can even get your first drink free.
Yeah, totally.
Well, hang on a minute, you're giving away too much here.
Am I?
Yeah.
Maybe we should work out a business discount. Plan. Yeah, a discount with a voucher that you can print off from this podcast.
I will tell you about some of the stories from Strange Tales 2, issue 3 of 3, that particularly caught my attention.
Could you tell us about some of the stories from Strange Tales, issue 3 of 3?
I'm going to do that thing. The first one that I particularly enjoyed is by Terry Moore. It's a Thor story. How Mjolnir.
I've always called it Mjolnir, but
Mjolnir,
I don't know if that's
got
right.
It strapped. And it's a silly tale about Thor in Norway in 1051 AD. And he's being a very silly man, and throwing his hammer. It's getting away from him. Ends up in a village, and Loki convinces Thor that a pig is actually a very beautiful woman, and Thor falls in love with a pig because Loki wants to make Thor feel ridiculous.
Because he's fucked a pig.
And it's a very joyous, silly little tale. Reminds me of Groove, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it looks like a similar sort
but
of story.
It's absolutely lovely, and it's told in a very comic-y, light-hearted tale. Light-hearted manner.
His name is Loki, but he's anything but, really.
No,
he?
Absolutely. He's totally in your face.
Yeah.
But he's quite cute and sneaky in this.
I like the art style in that.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's a lovely Silver Surfer tale by James Stoker.
There was some of his art kind of did the rounds on Twitter the other day, and it really nicely detailed sort of Galactus, I think. He's amazing.
There is a hilarious US agent drawn in a Silver Age style, very tongue-in-cheek, very camp story by Benjamin Mara, where US agent has to go and take out a terrorist who's been genetically spliced with the DNA of a velociraptor, and if that weren't enough, he's a nuclear warhead strapped to his back. They call him the Pterosaur.
And there's a picture of him on the next page. He looks scary.
He does look scary. It's very amusing when he tears off a US agent's female companion's dress to reveal her sexy undies.
How would you do that without slicing gouges out of him?
Like that, look.
Oh, yeah. I see.
He's brilliant. Paints US Walker as a really vain arse, which is most amusing. Highly amusing, frenetic little tale. Machine Man is a tale by Tim Hamilton. I didn't actually get a chance to read that one.
It looks like a slightly more dense story, that's fine.
The next one, which had me squeeing with delight, was Rogue Gets in Trouble. It's by Kate Beaton and Bill Crabtree. Drawn in a very freewheeling indie kind of style.
Yeah, you should look up her stuff online. She's good.
And if you're going to buy this, I'm going to spoiler this two-page story. Rogue smashes a vase. It's Professor X's favourite vase, and to stop getting into trouble with Professor X, she steals the powers of a cute kitty.
So that she's too cute for him to be angry with her.
She's just too cute. He can't be angry with her.
That could have backfired. Professor X could have been one of those people who'd kick. No, he wouldn't kick.
He could hate
cats. Thump her.
I don't want to talk about cats too much.
Oh, no. Well, you had a horrible thing, didn't you?
I did. I saw a dead kitty cat on the way to work the other day, and it's kind of stayed with me all week, and I don't really want to think about it. The Left Hand of Boom is the next story and art by Dean Haspiel, and that's a Wood God tale. Again, I didn't. Actually, it looks lovely, but I didn't read that.
You need to read that, dude. Dean Haspiel rocks out.
Oh, I tell you, he totally does. The next tale is a really cute little short story about two kids who find a telephone number for Luke Cage and see him kick ass.
The art looks awesome in that.
It is, and I can't see the credit for who it is, actually, which is annoying. Oh, T. Cypress.
Yeah, I don't know that name. It's really nice.
It's a lovely little cute story with Spider-Man, Jean Grey, and Iceman drawn as kind of cute little bobble-headed kids.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, and it's very amusing. Iceman gets melted and ends up on the side of a dog.
Oh, no.
Which is made me laugh. I lolled. Stan Lee presents an Alex Robinson tale, Fantastic Four. It's kind of like a Fantastic Four prequel, which again I didn't read all the way through, but it looks lovely.
Fantastic Four, the film was on the other day, and I actually remembered that I quite like bits of it.
Yeah, I like both.
I like
of them,
the bit
actually.
Where they get hit with the cosmic rays. That's awesome.
Yeah, I like both. I like the Silver Surfer as well. I think that's quite cool. The story following the Fantastic Four tale is With a Little Help from My Friends, by Eduardo Medios.
That is a very cool Spider-Man.
It is a very cool Spider-Man tale. It's very
Spider-Man.
Funny. I'm going to draw you
a very cool Spider-Man.
There you go. Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada bush.
Wash the gabba daggle.
Your accents are slipping. Is it
There must be a train.
You haven't had enough exposure to the source to get the accent right.
Essentially, this story is a wisecracking Spider-Man keeping Juggernaut waiting while he waits for Ben Grimm to turn up to help him kick his ass.
Ben Grimm's in this book a lot.
He is. And ends with him saying it's clobbering time, which is always good.
Yeah.
There's a little two-pager, again, in a very indie style.
It's all in.
Kate Beaton. Well, most of it, I suppose it is, isn't it?
Is it Kate Beaton again?
Yeah, Kate Beaton.
Yeah. Thor is brilliant at the bottom of that page.
A lovely little wordless Thor story of him going to the fair with his friends Hawkeye and Captain America. The final story in here is a absolute flipping treat. It's a Harvey Pekar, Ty Templeton story. Where Harvey has a chat with the Thing on the street, and it's just lovely.
That's brilliant.
And the
you think that predates this?
I think it predates Harvey's death by a few years, because he says in this that he's just about to give up the job.
Oh, right, okay.
In the hospital, and I think he'd given it up for a few years before he... I know in...
a couple of years, certainly.
I know Another Day, Another Dollar, the two trades I've read recently, he was not working, and that was 2 or 3 years ago. But it's lovely. It's just a chat with him and Ben Grimm, and there's a fantastic Ty Templeton portrait of Harvey in the back, and the book itself's dedicated to Harvey as well. It's a fucking lovely comic book, this.
Yeah.
It's, I think,
I'm actually a bit annoyed I didn't pick it up now.
I'm annoyed I didn't pick up one and two.
This is the second series, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So there's a book of the first one, so hopefully there'll be a book of the second one.
Yeah, but it should still be on the stands. If you've not picked it up, I'd do yourself a favour, really. It's a chuckle a minute.
It's a bit of a Marvel week, isn't it?
It is a bit of Marvel week. I really friggin' enjoyed that book.
I got stuff. Yeah. Anthology as well. I've got an anthology. I won't go into too much detail about it. But Prog, you know, we've both been buying... Yeah. James and I have both been buying 2000 AD. I bought Prog 2011, which was very exciting, because it's £4.50, but it's quite a big...
Yeah,
but
that's quite a bit.
Magazine size.
Yeah.
Do you know, I can't remember if it was you or Jane, I said, do you know, it looks like Clint, but not shit.
I've read, I think, all but two stories in this so far, mainly because of time. There's a Dread story in there that's Christmas themed and is really, really good. Like a really sort of nicely done... Al Ewing scripted story with art by Paul Marshall, which is just really, really nice.
A Dread story, yeah.
What I found a little bit peculiar about this, and it doesn't matter so much for those of us who are already getting it, but there's the beginnings of a few stories in this one, and they're not classic legacy stories. There's stories that I've been aware of peripherally, but because I wasn't reading 2000 AD, I didn't know. So there's the first part of a Shikara story, which has beautiful art. It's like, I think it's Robbie Morrison writing Henry Flint art. Really nice art that evokes kind of old Kevin O'Neill stuff.
That's gorgeous, isn't it?
Which is really pretty. It's a peculiar mix of stuff, considering this is like a special issue that costs £4.50. There's the final part of Slaying the Mercenary, which ended up being quite a fun little story. You know, I've got issues with the photo manipulated.
I enjoy it a lot more than you, don't I?
But it ends up being quite pretty. There's a Rogue Trooper story written by Jerry Finlay Day, who's like one of the classic Rogue Trooper writers.
Do you know, I had a flick through it? I didn't notice. I love Rogue Trooper so much.
With art by Stas Johnson, which really looks like old 2008 stuff. It's really nice. There's a story with art by Simon Davis, written by Ian Edgington, which is the first part of a new story, Anthony Crucis Investigates, which I haven't had a chance to read.
It looks like Boo Cook. Is it not?
Yeah, it does look a bit like him, but it's the guy who... it's Simon Davis who did the first part of the series that you saw... Is it Damnation Station?
Damnation Station.
This guy Simon Davis did the first part, and then Boo Cook took over, I think. So, there's a nice Judge Anderson story, which seems exactly a young Judge Anderson story, actually, which seems like a perfect fit for this book.
Mm.
Yeah. And then there's the first part of the Tony Lee scripted Lee Carter drawn Necrofilm, which I haven't had a chance to read yet. And the first part of Kingdom. Story, which is another one of those stories that's come to in the last few years, written by Dan Abnett with Richard Elson. The issue I have with this, and it's probably obvious from
but
what
Nick,
I've
you
kind
can,
of been
how
saying,
can you have an issue with a book that's so crammed full of Zazage thrills?
It's a peculiar mix of like a couple of stories finishing, and it seems weird for a special that it's £4.50. It would seem like a good opportunity to present stuff in. Like one shot stories, maybe a Future Shock in here, but what's actually happened, and maybe it's because I haven't been reading 2000 AD for a little while, but what's actually happened is they've started three or four strips that aren't classic 2000 AD as far as I'm concerned, And maybe that's it. Maybe if I knew Shakara as well as people who've been reading it for a while, I'd be like, oh my god, a new Shakara. But I'm so happy I paid £4.50.
But for a new reader, does it provide a hook?
I don't know. Because the thing is,
that's a gorgeous looking edition of 2000 AD.
Shakara's quite an exciting episode, but it is kind of one that requires a certain amount of knowledge of the of the story initially. You know, it drops you in at the beginning of a new story that's in part of, like, in quite a continuity heavy thing. I don't know, it just felt funny. I wasn't unhappy with any of the stories in it. But what I found peculiar was that in a special there was such an odd mix of one shot stories but also the beginning of a couple of stories and the end of a new one. It's all things being equal, £4.50 for that many cool stories much cool art and quite, like, pretty good writing. Not pretty good, that's nonsense. There's really good writing in this. Is really good value for money. It's a really nice cover.
It's so
Simon Fraser
cool
cover.
Looking, isn't it?
It just felt peculiar because it felt like an oversized issue. And I guess where it's on the shelf at such a high price point, and seems like a perfect opportunity to be a special.
Yeah,
it's actually just a really big issue.
I wish it was like that. It looks gorgeous. I wish it was like that every week.
I wouldn't have a problem with paying £4.50, or maybe weekly.
Yeah, weekly's going to hurt.
I don't know.
Fiver a week actually is going to start to hurt.
Yeah, it would actually. You're absolutely right.
Because you're going to have to drop another book on the back of that.
Yeah. Although, considering how awesome some of you did, didn't it? Very briefly mention, I picked up Amazing Spider-Man kind of by accident. Amazing Spider-Man 650, issue 650, it's written by Dan Slott, with art by Humberto Ramos. When I say by accident, I picked it up off the shelf because I'd read the preview, which promised a new outfit and it was all very exciting. And I flicked through it, and then I thought, actually, it's in the middle of a story. I don't really know what's going on in the Spider-Man universe at the moment. But then at some point when we were downstairs in the shop, I must have picked up another copy of it, because I ended up buying it, which was quite unusual. It's got a Tron variant cover, like the way a lot of the Marvel books have at the moment, but it isn't really a variant cover. It's peculiar. Humberto Ramos's art is great. Dan Slott writes a really sort of quite snappy and interesting Spider-Man story. The characters, they're all, you know, a little bit cheeky and snappy and wacky, but, you know, the way they talk to each other is all very sort of, it's not, like, naturalistic. It's very sort of comic booky, but that's fine. I really like, there's a new Hobgoblin in it, and Humberto Ramos really draws the scenes with him in, and with Spider-Man in, really nicely. It's just really a really fun Spider-Man book, which I quite enjoyed. Is it a good jumping on point? Well, I don't know. I might actually buy the next issue, but it does come in halfway through a fight. But things seem interesting for Peter Parker at the moment, and it was quite a fun read.
Okay. He's had quite an interesting life, really, hasn't he?
He has. I'm a little bit confused as to whether he's got his memory back or not. I don't really know whether he remembers all of the stuff about him being rolled back to
Brand New
before
days.
He and Mary Jane got married and stuff like that, or whatever happened. I find it very confusing.
I don't think you're alone there.
No. Well, I mean, I found that particular issue very confusing, because I'm not sure what the relationship is between him and Mary Jane. Mary Jane is in that. Humberto Ramos just draw a very nice Mary Jane, and also a rather, like, slinky and sexy looking black cat as well. So I bought,
stop talking about cats,
sorry. I'm sorry. I bought Black Panther: The Man Without Fear. It's kind of Daredevil Man Without Fear number 513, but obviously Black Panther's taken over because Daredevil has left town.
Nick, okay. I was almost dismissive in my handing this back from my standing order. Tell me if I made a mistake.
Okay, it's written by David Liss, with art by Francesco Francavilla. It's beautifully drawn. The colours really nice and pulpy. There's a really nice pulp feel to it. And they've come up with some really interesting. It's a really interesting take. It's a really interesting idea. It's a really interesting story. It's a really interesting idea. The idea is that that Matt Murdock came to Black Panther, both of whom have had a fall from grace recently, but most people haven't been following the Black Panther one because it wasn't part of a big crossover or anything, I don't think. Black Panther now doesn't have his powers, he doesn't have all of his technology, and he wanted a kind of a new start. And Matt Murdock said, well, you know, someone needs to be looking after Hell's Kitchen. This all happens on the first couple of pages. It's just occurred to me there might be a spoiler, though. Oh, well, anyway. The Black Panther gets a new identity. He, rather than being a lawyer, he kind of sets himself up as manager of a cafe, like a old style New York sort of late night diner sort of thing. And lives in an apartment building that's really cruddy, so that he can get in touch with people, so that he can learn what it's like being in Hell's Kitchen, and so that he can better police the streets. These are all good ideas. There's a gang leader introduced who's quite interesting, called Vlad. That's a good idea too. I'm hoping that by the second issue of this run, because I will probably buy it, it won't feel quite so much like I'm being told a story, rather than reading a story. The characters' voices aren't quite right, and there's a lot of info being dumped in this, but not in a way that I'm particularly sort of. A lot of this stuff played out over two or three issues, rather than having it told to me in quite a lumpy way, which is what's actually happened. I don't think if you are struggling to fit in books, you know, if you're struggling to get around to reading books or struggling to be able to justify buying books, that you made a mistake not picking this one.
Yeah, I've chosen that as a jumping off point. I will, maybe, we'll see how I'm getting on when Matt Murdock returns. I might start picking up Daredevil again, but I think I've mentioned before, Daredevil as a series has been so mind-numbingly decompressed and slow-burning, and I haven't actually read the final parts of Shadowland.
Oh, right, okay. Oh.
But I'm not. I know what happens. I'm not sure. I read Christine's blog on. I'd probably rather read that than read Daredevil at the moment.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, I like Christine's blog. It's very good. The other Murdoch papers, if you're not familiar with it, which you should be, but it's excellent.
It's
a little bit too much for me. It's just been disappointing.
It's an interesting take, and the rationale behind Black Panther being the new man without fear in Hell's Kitchen, it kind of works. It works better than I was expecting it to. I just felt like it could have been slightly better written. But I've not heard of the writer before, so I don't know if I don't know if he's a writer from another field. I've not heard of David List before. I don't know if he's a writer from another field, or it might be that he'll find his way with the format or something. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to dismiss it entirely, because there are some really nice ideas there, and it felt a lot like reading Daredevil in the early 90s. It's all very street level, beating up hoods, finding out like information from them,
which all sounds cool. Going
absolutely mental.
They're potty.
But yeah, I mean,
should my wife order the pizza or something?
No, I don't think so. You'll hear her screaming at them in a minute. Jane.
My turn. There wasn't really much out for me this week. As in, there was nothing out for me this week. So I just picked up a random called Doc Macabre, which is an IDW. So issue one, which is always a...
I do like glowy, a one on
Yeah, everyone likes a one. But the story's by Steve Niles and the art's by Bernie Wrightson.
Ooh. I've got a t-shirt with Bernie Wrightson.
Yeah. The reason I picked it up is because the cover, it's got zombies on the cover, and it makes me think of the print I got from Lee Gallagher a bit. So
definitely Bernie Wrightson influence in. Yeah, no, that's right.
That's why I picked it up. Mm. But it's a story about a young man who...
I love how you say that.
Well, I was going to say young a boy, man. But he's not a boy. Mm. And he's not really a man. The whole focus of the story is he is so young. It's a story about a young man who is...
How you say that.
Now you're getting a bit weird.
Sorry, no, go on. I was just... I was playing mind games and it backfired because now I feel like my head's done in.
Okay. He's a scientist and he's been developing ways of killing monsters, basically, ranging from zombies to werewolves to vampires to everything. And in the opening pages, he comes to the rescue of some people who've been overwrought by zombies, and he's trying out a new gadget and he's not sure if it's going to work, and basically it's sending them all back to their graves. So there's all these zombies, he shoots them with the rays, he's not sure if it's going to work, and all the zombies trundle back to their graves and then bury themselves back in their graves, which I thought was really cute. You learn a bit about him as they go back to his sort of headquarters, and he's got a very creepy robot that's his sort of butler, I guess.
Can I double check to see if the robot is creepy or your prejudice?
No, look, he's creepy. All robots are creepy, but he's very creepy.
He's quite cute.
He's cute but creepy. And
you're so prejudiced.
No. All robots are scary. They're going to take over the world.
Robots
kill
are people
everyone.
Too, man.
And I'll be living on an island, all the food and all the animals on my own.
Hello.
That's depressing.
That sounds a bit weird.
You go back to his headquarters and you see a bit of the contraptions that he's been making, and he's got some clients waiting for him and an elderly couple who are being haunted by an angry, how does he put it? Sorry, I should double check for you. They're being haunted by a poltergeist.
Ooh, poltergeist.
Yeah, who is, he is...
Dave. I hear Russell Brand's making a film of Rent-A-Ghost.
Oh, sorry.
Really? That's weird.
Sorry.
When Dr. Macabre, or Doc Macabre, asks what sort of ghost it is, he says it's an old man. He's haggard and naked and very angry.
No.
Yeah. So not really what you want floating around your house. And no.
Old people shouldn't be naked ever.
And
or dead or angry.
And it keeps telling them to get out of the house, and they've lived in this house for 5 generations and no one's died recently, so it's all very bizarre to Doc Macabre why this ghost is acting this way. And he goes to the house, and we'll leave it there. This is a really cute story. It was so silly and just something that I reckon teenage boys would get into. It was very Ghostbusters. I really like that. Where he has different contraptions to get rid of different ghouls and scary things. It's obviously there's a lot of introduction to him and who he is. The writing's okay. It's not the best I've ever read, but for the story, it's perfect. It's silly. It's a bit cheesy and a bit sort of, it is a bit teenage in places, but it's good. The artwork I really like. That's what attracted me to this. Like I said, the cover reminded me of the Lee Gallagher print I have. But it's brilliant. The different styles of the panels, where at night they're all sort of black and white and grey, and then the sort of light of the rays reflecting on the zombies. And the zombies have a little bit of voices, because he's trying to draw attention. So it's attention, ladies and gentlemen, and then they go, rah, rah, which I thought was quite nice. You know, think of zombies.
Zombie
impersonation? Yeah.
That's good.
But they're inquisitive. They're inquisitive.
Brain.
But you never think of zombies saying anything.
Brains.
But the light reflecting off them, the colour and the art style, just they're really, really nice in this.
Colouring's looks really nice. Bernie Wrightson's a bit of an old master, though. Kind of,
the detail is incredible in this.
Bernie looks a bit like Beast of Gold.
Bernie Wrightson, I don't know what the artist looks like.
No, you do.
Oh, the character. My chair keeps squeaking. Yeah, he does. I saw that he's got quite quirky hair. I like that.
He has, but he's absolutely ripped.
He is, isn't he? Young man.
exactly.
When zombies say brains...
Brains.
They don't say brains.
They do sometimes.
Nom.
They say that.
That makes more sense, because if they ate everybody's brains, then the people wouldn't come back as zombies. It's like they're giving away their...
That's true.
I want to have a look at that when you're finished talking about it.
Yeah, the artwork is lovely. The story was really cute and silly. And there's an interview, exclusive interview with Doc Macabre at the back, which I thought was a really good way of giving a bit more background on the character. So things that you've picked up during the story in this interview, it's just like in a magazine. It starts off where he's describing meeting Doc McCabe and what his first impressions are. Like, you get in a magazine interview and then all the questions he's going through about his age and the types of things he has to do and working with the police and about his childhood. There's, at the beginning, there's a few panels of people talking about him, just saying what kind of person he is and just saying how he excelled very young and people in his class hated him for it because it brought up the grade curve, the curve of the grade average, and you know how he didn't quite fit in but he was very talented, and it was a nice introduction to a character. And the bit at the back was just a nice little interview where you get to know him a bit more. I thought it was lovely.
Actually, he looks like a love child of Booster Gold and Conan O'Brien.
Oh, I thought he looked a bit like
you managed to read, blimey, you know, I wouldn't be able to read prose. It's too difficult to concentrate with James being there looking all gorgeous.
Thank you.
I learned to zone you guys out in a nice way.
He just couldn't read anything. All the time.
I couldn't read anything for singing along to the Stone Roses.
Apparently, as well, IDW are going to be doing some sort of zombie special running through loads of their other stories, loads of their other comics.
Yeah, zombies versus everyone from the first 2011.
Zombies are awful popular right now.
Yeah.
They have been for a couple of years.
That's it. Zombies versus Star Trek, zombie versus Transformers, zombie versus G.I. Joe, zombie versus Ghostbusters. Zombies infestation.
Zombies, for God's sake, give it up, IDW.
Steve Niles has done quite a lot for them, I think, for IDW, and he wrote 30 Days of Night. So he's got a horror-y
background. Yeah. Zombies are great, I'm joking.
I love them, and you're not allowed to say nothing about them.
No, nothing at all. Right.
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, nothing.
You're not the boss of me, man.
And I'm not that big.
Well, you are.
Oh wow. James.
That was a bit strange, James.
That is, I'm not sure what happened and creepy there. And I'm not happy with that.
I'm wearing those jeans though.
Can you edit that out?
Yeah, we should probably listen to somebody else now.
Yeah, we'll try and piece together something from the epic that David has sent us. And we'll just have a little rest.
Bear Force 1.
Oh, is that your theme? Sorry, did I piss all over it?
No, that's right. I was just saying Bear Force 1.
Bear Force. Okay.
Fine. These are all meshed together beautifully.
It'll be brilliant.
Yeah.
Over to you, David.
Hello, Momcast and Momcast listener. It's David Wynne, once again, author of Particle Fiction. James and Nick asked me to talk about this month's Particle Fiction. This month is the second Scorched Earth story, the second story featuring Dawn Garrett, which is the first time in the run. You know, Particle Fiction's been going 9 months so far, long enough to have a baby, and this is the first time I've revisited a character other than Ideas Man, and Ideas Man's kind of a special case because the whole Particle Fiction concept for me kind of developed out of drawing Ideas Man comics for myself for fun. Issues 2 and 4 of Particle Fiction were actually drawn months before I started the comic. Scorched Earth is kind of allied to Ideas Man in some ways. I drew the first Ideas Man comic for my own enjoyment. While I was drawing it, I came up with the idea for the second one and drew that. And while I was drawing that, I came up with ideas for another 4. I realised that, you know, I had a series. Here was a story engine that would allow me to tell so many different types of stories. I couldn't think of a single story idea that I had that could not be slightly reworked in a very superficial way and fit into Ideas Man and become an Ideas Man story. And so I was like, this is my Hellboy. This is my, or my Savage Dragon or, whatever. This is my series that I could just start doing and keep doing forever. and then I came up with Scorched Earth. And Scorched Earth doesn't fit in the Ideas Man universe. And it came to me Well, I was watching Terminator Salvation, of all things, which I rather like. I'm an unapologetic fanboy for Christian Bale. I like the whole post-apocalyptic concept. I started thinking about twists and turns that you could put on that concept. And within 24 hours, I had 18 issues worth of... not without trying. I wasn't, you know, thinking, oh, I must come up with a series. Quite the reverse. As I say, I had my series. I didn't want to fuck with it. I realised that that was when I realised, no, I couldn't just do an Ideas Man. I had to do an anthology, because sooner or later I would feel straitjacketed. Scorched Earth was originally devised, in my head, as a long-running sort of serial. In that sort of 18-issue run, which doesn't even bring the story to a real conclusion, it just moves it on to the next phase, there is a lot that changes, a lot that happens, a lot of surprises. And obviously, with Particle Fiction, the original concept with that was to try and do something complete every month for the reader, to come in and read a full story, not have to come back next month. The idea being that if they come back next month, it's because they want to, because I'm not very good at business. Scorched Earth presents some unique problems in that sense, because most of my story ideas fall into one category or another. They're either epics, or they are things that literally can be boiled down to 16 pages and done. So there are some things that won't ever find their way into Particle Fiction because they're too long, because 16 pages would not work. Scorched Earth, on the other hand, devises is more of an adventure serial with cliffhangers and things changing, constant upheaval. Divides itself into serialized chapters quite nicely. I kind of thought of it that way. I thought, oh, what would I do that issue? All right, well, so how would I change things for the next issue? Well, so how would I change things for the issue after that? That was my thinking process. So it does naturally divide itself up, but not in a standalone manner, which presents its own problems when trying to tell standalone stories. What I don't want to end things with a cliffhanger, or a cliffhanger. There's a difference between a cliffhanger and an ambiguous ending. I didn't want to end things. I don't mind if there's, you know, this feeling of impending doom or something at the end of the story, as long as there is a conclusion to the story within the story. And I didn't always have that. But in terms of actual, I mean, it's a story. I have a story in my head that this happens, this happens, this happens. Put it on the paper. It's kind of, I'm a big craft guy. I read about craft obsessively, and I think about craft obsessively. But when it comes to the actual work, I kind of do it idiot savant style. So it's very difficult to talk about how my approach was different, because it wasn't. What I did have was an increasing feeling as I was doing it of, this isn't fair on the Particle Fiction readers who have come in expecting one thing and I've given them something else. But then that's kind of the what I've been doing all along anyway. I mean, Particle Fiction 8 the readers came in expecting one thing and I gave them something else. So, you know, maybe that's always what I'm going to keep doing. But Particle Fiction next year is going to be taking a bit of a different turn. Once the first year is up, I need to do something to deal with this issue. From issue 13 onwards, there will be a change in approach, which I'm going to try out for about a year. You know, so, you know, because I've been doing this for a year, might as well do the next thing for a year, and we'll see what you all think. It does address this issue of trying to tell a serialized story in standalone chunks, and that doesn't work. I have a solution, and you will see what that is. I think that's everything. Particlefiction.posterous.com. Come read. If you don't read it already, of course, you do pop along and have a read. All right. Love to all the monkeys. Peace, love, Dolphin Free Tuna.
Hello, monkeys. This is George Beedham, and I still don't have a theme tune. What I do have, though, is a new book for sale online. Well, I say new. It's the one I launched at Thought Bubble that you've read. It's issue number 5 of The Mighty Jambo, my superhero parody. It's, as the big companies like to say, an ideal jumping-on point for new readers. Basically, my last storyline finished with issue 4, and this one's kicking off an all-new arc that is very, very long and could possibly kill me. I like it. I think it's good. So everyone should go to Comics Press. That's comics with an X, .com, and buy my book. Please, it's Christmas.
Thank you, David, and thank you, George.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That's brilliant.
And read Particle Fiction and read Jambo, or else.
Or else what, James?
I don't know.
You learnt some new things. You read some new things this week, didn't you?
I've read some new things. I've done some new things. For example, while I'm also plugging people, you should also listen to Dissecting Worlds. You may remember Nihal, Clarky the Cruel, did a piece for us for our anniversary show. And it sounds like they're doing a Radio 4 classic panel show mashup.
Ooh.
On their podcast this week. Part of the Geek Syndicate Network, so it should be very easy to find. Dissecting Worlds.
Dissecting Worlds.
Dissecting Worlds.
Dissecting Worlds.
Yes.
You can search for it under dissecting or dissecting.
Yeah, but not dissecting.
Not dissecting.
No. I mean, idiot would say that.
Words, worlds.
Were, yeah. So
all these words have ceased to have any meaning for me now.
Nothing has any meaning really for me.
Oh, man.
Anymore. After reading the Perry Fellowship. No, the Perry Bible Fellowship.
Perry Bible Fellowship.
Oh, I can't believe I'd not read this before.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's whimsy with sugar on top, isn't it?
Yeah, whimsy with sugar on top and vinegar to rub into the wounds.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I love the Perry Bible Fellowship. It's creepy.
Yeah, it is creepy. It's lovely, though, isn't it?
Mm.
I love it. I kind of didn't get any work done at work on Tuesday because someone said, oh, have you seen this, at the beginning of the day? By the end of the day, I'd looked at all of the cartoons on there. Not got as much done, really, as I should have.
When I first started reading it, it didn't have an RSS feed, so it was difficult to subscribe to, and you had to remember to go back. So I need to go and have a look at that, because it was amazing. The art's just amazing.
It's incredible. If you've not, I'm sure you're sat at home going, oh, I can't believe you haven't seen that, James. But
is that your Igor impersonation? Because you're all Igor, listener.
Yeah. But if you've not seen it, go and treat your eyes. It's lovely.
It's more like and your brain. Notre Dame.
Yeah, a little bit more like that.
Mm. And your brain. Your eyes, feast your eyes.
Feast your eyes and feed your brain.
Feast your eyes, feed your brain, and I don't know, void your bowels.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely void your bowels.
Enjoy something good.
Hmm. Yes, what Jane said. That's a so much more succinct way of saying what James and I had just said.
Don't poo yourself.
Well, don't poo yourself.
You're welcome to if you want to. Go for it. It's Christmas. let your hair down.
That was David and George.
Thank you, David and George.
We are hoping, those of you who've been listening for a while, or those of you who've recently started listening but have gone back and listened to every single other podcast we've done because you're mentally deficient or something, I don't know.
Yeah, sorry if you've done that.
Yeah, really sorry. But you'll remember that around this time last year, well, not around this time, around this time in 2 weeks' time last year. When did we do it, James? What did
we do? Around this time last year.
Yeah, we did a special. And by special, I mean we couldn't get hold of new comics to do, so we decided to do
it was supplementary.
Yeah,
we got comics as well that week. We did
how
a normal
dedicated
pod,
were we?
And we did an extra pod of the year.
Do you know, I was so high the whole time we were doing those first few that I can't remember that at all. We did a different
the only one. Being you weren't, I think I was.
Yeah, we did a pod. Anyway, the upshot of all that is that we did a breakdown of the stuff we'd really liked over the last year.
And we will name a Momcast Book of the Year. We will agree between us.
Yes, between us.
What the consensus is.
With John in his absence.
No, I think John's going to come along and do that as well.
Excellent.
He's written material for it, which is just unheard of.
We don't. You sometimes research your Tintin things.
Well, in so much as I print out the wiki page. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. But anyway, so we're going to be doing a pod of the year, but obviously this time last year we hadn't really worked out technology, so we weren't taking submissions, and now we are.
Yes.
So, in a similar way to what we did with show 52, we would very much like you to send us audio submissions between 2 and 5 minutes.
Yes, please.
And between 2 and 5 minutes of your favourite comics of the year.
Or 20 minutes if we really like you.
Or 20 minutes and we'll cut it down to try and make a coherent narrative out of your chuntering.
Oh, that's
chuntering isn't an offensive word, is it?
I love listeners chuntering. I could listen to a listener chunter at me all day and it would send me off into a warm, dreamy sleep.
So anyway, yeah, between 2 and 5 minutes... your favourite books of the year, your favourite comic things that happened in the year, anything. Basically, your year in comics. That's it, really, isn't it?
Highlights or lowlights, if you want them.
Yeah, you can talk about stuff you didn't like so much. You can't all talk about the same thing, though, before you get that idea into your head.
Yeah, so stop it.
Yeah. What was that thing again? No, it's okay. You know.
You know as well as I do.
You know my tastes. So yeah, if you could send that to the normal address, which is mombcast, that's mombcast, at gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's gmail, full stop, com.
Or spot.
Or period for our American listeners.
Period.
Or spot.
Or spot. You can't really have just been giggling because I said period.
No, I was contorting, I was having like a little mini fit.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Are you okay?
All right now.
Okay. So, submissions for our pod of the year would be most welcome. Audio submissions, or you can send us an email or a letter or a tweet.
Or a video.
Or a video.
We can attach a video to the app for this podcast.
Do you know, we can do all of these things.
Do we have a date that we need these by?
Oh, my God. before the next one.
No, it'll be between Christmas and New Year we record.
Yeah, so... so, next couple of weeks.
By the 30th, then, we need it.
No. Shall we say the 30th? Shall we do it on the 30th?
Should we have worked this out before?
Let's do it on the 30th. Let's decide live on air. Live on air. Like, yeah, because this is live on
no,
air.
No, probably the... no, we're going to do it on the...
29th or the 30th. What are we saying, people?
Let's say 29th. What day is the 29th?
Hold on, let me have a look.
29th is a Wednesday. I think we should do it for the 30th.
Yeah, but then if we do it on the 30th, we're doing a podcast on that day too.
Yeah, but I was thinking we could do it for the weekend.
I don't even know what Jane's saying now.
29th, I think 29th, because if 30th is a Thursday, we'll be doing the normal one on the Thursday as well.
Yeah, we'll do the 29th and on the 30th, we'll come and do the normal pod.
Normal pod.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to make sure I'm back in time for the 29th.
Yes,
you're going to be back in time.
I bet me back in time.
So you're going to go forward in time?
Yep.
And then back in time.
Mm-hmm.
So how about that? I'm sure that was an exciting piece of...
I think it probably was.
I'm not sure if they do podcast awards, but if they do them and you can do a show reel, totally, that last 2 minutes...
Our brains ticking over in action. That was amazing.
That's a show reel right there.
Yeah. This is improvisational genius right here. We're like comedy gods.
Oh, God, I am so sorry to all of you.
And on that note of dismay and regret, James, what have you got for us this week?
It's story time! Yay.
Tintin, for our UK listener.
It's the next in my series of...
Tintin.
Tintin, they're not really reviews, are they?
They are
reviews.
They're not really.
I will fight anyone in the street who says they aren't reviews, and I will sell tickets, and I will probably throw the fight if I'm offered enough money to do so.
Magic.
Cool.
This time it's Tintin the Broken Ear. It's an early Tintin. So I think the last few we've looked at have been later period Tintins, if you like. Certainly the Castafiore, Fiori. I told you I used to have trouble pronouncing her name.
Castafiore.
Emerald, I said, was very much a story or told by someone who was the absolute peak of their powers as a storyteller. The Broken Air, which was pre-Studio Hergé, so it's serialised in the Le Petit Vingtième between 35-37. I think might be the last of the pre-war. Possibly, I'm not sure. I'd have to check. I made some notes actually, and I actually made a note to check whether it was the last of the pre-war tints. It can't have been.
It's the last of the pre-war period. That's full stop.
Full stop.
To our UK listener.
It was first published in book form in 37 in French, and then a colourised version first appeared in 1943.
Could you say the bit in French again, the name of the thing?
Le Petit Vingtième.
Do you get a little thrill when he says something in French, Jane?
No.
Oh, okay.
The little
I don't either.
The little
so.
No.
This is an early book, and I think it's not unfair to say to Hergé, although it's brilliant, because all Tintin books are brilliant if we draw a veil over Tintin and the Congo. He's not at the peak of his powers. Some of the storytelling, clumsy's unfair, but there's a segue between what is essentially a mystery story, which sandwiches a political satire, essentially. The segueing between mystery and satire is at times a little bit, not forced, but rereading it this week, a couple of times, I was reading it and I thought, I'm going to have to go back. How did we get here?
Yeah.
I'm confused. So it's kind of a little bit forced, which also I think is maybe a consequence of the way that it was originally written as a serial drama. Certainly, serialised story, certainly when compared to maybe Tintin in America and Cigars of the Pharaoh, doesn't have that frenetic stoppy-starty pace that you sort of you find in those stories. It's more linear in terms of the storytelling. But Hergé still has to find his feet as a storyteller, which I think he kind of does once he gets to the Black Island King Ottokar's scepter. That's when he really starts to hit his stride. As I say, it's still excellent. Some of the art also is not quite as crisp and fresh as you find in the later books, but again, it's a consequence of the way it was, the style it was written. The Studio Hergé books, he would have had time to labour over.
Yeah.
Over the books, whereas, you know, I guess he had a deadline to hit when he was working for Petit Vingtième to get these out. So, as I say, it's essentially a mystery story, political satire in the middle, and the mystery story concludes towards the end.
Sorry, it's worthy of note at this point that this edition is, because money is quite tight in the James Mond household.
That's right.
This is an old edition. He's been using these reviews as an excuse to buy nice plush editions of all of the. Your wife listens to this.
This edition I've had since 1987.
Yeah, you need to trade that in, really.
I'm not trading them. I'm just keeping them. It's just very nice. I will get this in hardback. I am loving collecting these in hardback and having refreshing my collection. Nicola knows what I'm doing. She's not.
Oh, she doesn't. She understands. It's not like you're not scamming her.
She's the intelligent one in the relationship between the two of us.
Yeah.
So you haven't been going and saying, "Oh, darling, I've got to buy a new Tintin hardcover for the review. I can't possibly review an old copy."
Yeah. If she was as thick as me,
If she was as thick as you, what?
She was thick as me. She wouldn't have worked out what I'm up to. But she's a very intelligent lady. Just not very clever when it comes to making life partner selections.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. There's a lot of that about.
Yeah.
See, anyway, people like you and me ever get anywhere in life, really, isn't it?
Sadly, that is entirely accurate. the book opens at the Museum of Ethnology.
The Museum of Ethnology? The
Museum of Ethnology.
Well, I do get the feeling there's going to be some crunching irony coming up at some point in the near future.
There's some crunching something. Where a Umbria fetish, which is on display, an Umbria idol, goes missing.
Umbria is African, is it?
South American. It's a lost South American tribe. Rare South American tribe. Tintin, obviously, being the boy reporter, he is actually, we see a little bit of reporting here. he goes to visit a guard in the museum. That's definitely a notepad in his hand, isn't it?
Yeah, he's actually doing a little bit of reporting back then.
Yeah, we see a very early appearance from the Thompsons, who look slightly more squat and red-faced and not quite so familiar with Tintin as they will become in later stories.
Do you know where they first appear?
They first appear... Oh, God, is it Cigars of the Pharaoh?
You could tell us it is, we wouldn't.
I think the very first story you will see them in is in terms of the chronological order that the books are in now, so in Tintin continuity. Hergé redrew them into Tintin and the Congo, I think.
Right, okay.
So they're appearing now. I think it might be Cigars of the Pharaoh they first appear in. But they're not really established as the characters that we come to love by the time you get to, say, I don't know, certainly by the time you get to Destination Moon, which and Explorers on Moon, which I think are my favourite Thompson books. Anyway, the fetish goes missing, returns very quickly thereafter, but with a note saying essentially someone was pulling a prank. Sorry for any inconvenience, here's your statue back. Tintin, though, does a little bit of research and notices from a sketch in this book that actually the idol that was stolen should have had a broken ear.
Oh.
But the one that's returned is perfect. So this piques his curiosity.
That doesn't sound like Banksy.
It's not Banksy.
Right.
His attention's drawn to a woodcarver who has died in slightly mysterious circumstances. Tintin puts two and two together and works out that obviously this woodcarver must have had something to do with the fetish.
Makes sense.
Which, when you're reading the story, this is the first time that I had to flip back, because it's... Well, actually, that's a bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fair enough. It still flows. It's just... It's ever so slightly forced in terms of the storytelling. Yeah. Later on, Hergé wouldn't be quite so forced in terms of the story progressing. He became slightly more sophisticated than he is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He visits Balthazar, for it is he who has died.
Oh.
He visits his apartment, where he talks to his landlady, who said he had a parrot, and Tintin works out that actually the parrot would have been the only possible witness to what must have been the murder. Because Tintin quite rightly deduces that Balthazar was supposedly died from gas inhalation.
Mm.
However, his parrot survived. If it had been a gas inhalation, the parrot should have died.
It's like reverse canary.
That's quite right. So this mysterious South American man has beat Tintin to it and has taken the parrot. But the parrot escapes after an altercation in the street with a rather rotund man. Because the parrot's in a box and it's saying, "Great greedy guts!" And the man takes great offence. But to be fair, especially for the 1930s, he's a fatty, isn't he?
He does look quite big.
I mean, you know, I'm a big lad now, but, you know, for the time we live in, you know, I'm svelte.
That's morbidly obese.
It is, absolutely.
The sheer amount of orphan children that must have gone hungry to feed that greedy...
Greedy guts.
Great greedy guts.
Great greedy guts.
We also, as they try to track the parrot down, we also get to see what I think looks like an early Cuthbert Calculus as well.
Yeah.
He's certainly a professor and looks very similar to him. He's a dizzy and confused, rather red-faced man with a ludicrous coat on as well.
That's quite an extravagant coat.
It is an extravagant coat. I think it's... I suspect it's the wrong one. Anyway, eventually Tintin tracks down the parrot, which leads our mysterious South American villain to Tintin, who makes his first of several bungled attempts to murder Tintin as the lights go off. The parrot escapes again and turns up back at Balthazar's house, at which point our mysterious South American man picks him up again. Tintin arrives just in time to see the Carly with the parrot.
Hand again.
He is, yeah, absolutely. Right. But he's writing down the number plate.
Oh, that's different.
So he can track down these mysterious South American criminals. The parrot eventually spills its guts and leads Tintin and the two bungling villains, Ramon and... Bear me a moment.
Bear with.
Yeah. Hold on. It's in my... It's in my... Are you bearing with me?
Yeah, I'm bearing with you.
It's Ramon and I forget the other dude's name.
Oh, no, we're slipping away quick.
Oh, Alonso and Ramon are the
Alonso.
Two...
Alonso.
Are the two...
They sound like football players.
They do, yeah.
It's a moment of... fragment of detail that was quite important. It was definitely worth the wait. Calamba!
That's right. So they work out, Alonso and Ramon work out that, because the parrot tells them, it's a chap called Tortilla. Who is, Rodrigo Tortilla. He's actually the murderer.
That's a brilliant name.
And they learn that Tortilla is on a boat bound for South America. Tintin, luckily, at this point, is listening outside of the window, so he's able to don a disguise and follows our mysterious South American
killer. What's the disguise?
Well, it could be a number of people. It could be the...
Elton John.
It could be Elton John. It could be the old man. Or possibly even it could be...
Oh, my gosh. No way.
We find out that it's not Elton John. We find out it's not the old man.
He's a gollywog.
It is essentially... His disguise is essentially...
Oh, my Lord. He's like the tar baby in Geraldine and Blighton. He's...
Yes, it's horrible. It's... Yeah.
He looks like some weird negative image sex doll.
Yeah, he's...
I don't like it. Yeah, make it go away.
I have made it go away. I'm not going to make excuses for it. We've discussed at length before some of the unfortunate depictions.
Stereotyping.
Yeah, a racial stereotyping. I'm not going over it again.
No.
I refuse to apologize.
I'm intrigued. I want to know what these mysterious South American men are up to. What if they didn't kill him? I want to know why they're looking for him.
Well, they kill Tortilla in an attempt to find the original fetish. They get to South America. Los Dopios.
I like it when he says foreign words.
Which is in the Republic of San Theodoros, whereby Ramon and Alonso are arrested. Tintin obviously decides to keep sticking his nose in and goes ashore, whereby he gets embroiled in the politics of South America.
Oh, you don't want to get involved in the politics of South America.
He doesn't. Obviously, Ramon and Alonso are chummy with the guys that have arrested him, and Tintin unfortunately finds himself in front of a firing squad.
That was dramatic.
And dear.
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah. As luck would have it, though, this is a somewhat unstable South American country, and just as he's about to be shot for the second time, a revolution happens.
Just when you want one.
General Alcazar takes control of the country. Alcazar we will meet several times again in the Tintin books. In fact, we see him in the final fully completed Tintin book, Tintin and the Picaros. When Tintin actually returns to San Theodoros in what is a more sophisticated satire of South American politics. Tintin is obviously immediately made Alcazar's Colonel aide-de-camp. Because why would he not? You know,
why would you not trust a man with a coconut head?
Yeah, whereby Alcazar's deposed aide-de-camp becomes one of many people who over the next few pages attempt to kill Tintin.
He's not making any friends this time.
He's not. And obviously Alonso and Ramon are also colonels. They're trying to kill Tintin as well. But essentially this middle section of the story is an adventure story set against the backdrop of confused South American politics.
Mm-hmm.
And the satire occurs really where you have... a businessman from an American oil company basically trying to convince Tintin and Alcazar to start a war with the bordering country.
Oh.
And also a corrupt arms dealer. It's actually Basil Bazarov from Corrupt Arms.
That's their actual name.
Yeah.
Corrupt, spelled with a K. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Well, they're German.
Corrupt Arms GmbH. What does GmbH stand for?
I can't remember what it stands for, but it denotes... isn't it like a limited over here in Germany?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same as like if you're a limited company. And essentially, they're trying to set the two. They're trying to set the two countries against each other, which mirrors. If I look at the research I did, it actually does mirror the conflict between. Oh my goodness, Bolivia. I might as well read verbatim from the wiki page.
Go on, I've already admitted, what do they say?
The mutually disastrous conflict between San Theodoros and neighbouring state of Nuevo Rico is called the Gran Chapo War, a reference to the Gran Chapo War, 1932 to 1935, between Bolivia and Paraguay. Oil companies from Standard Oil and Shell Oil basically provoked the war.
Right.
They wanted rights to oil fields between the two countries, provoked a war. So if they backed the winning, country, they would have exclusive rights to the oil field. And basically Hershey is satirising that particular conflict in this book.
I like the name of that place. Paraguay.
Paraguay, yeah.
It sounds like a pair of guys. Like you're a guy. Sounds like you're a guy.
Tintin manages to start and then end conflict between the two neighbouring states.
Mm. He starts it,
and then almost immediately I think he finishes it.
Is that the first ever appearance of the Red Hulk?
It is the first appearance of the Red Hulk, absolutely. Well,
that's interesting, on a poster there, yeah. That's peculiar.
And later on, actually, it's the first ever appearance of Galactus as well.
Really?
No.
Oh.
Anyway, this is again where it gets a little bit clumsy. From escaping the conflict, Tintin ends up in what looks like a cocoa plantation of some description. Well, it's certainly a plantation. Where he basically picks up the quest to find out what's happened to this idol with the broken ear.
I'd actually forgotten entirely about that.
Absolutely, you do. Yeah. The middle section, the mystery is almost completely dropped.
Mm.
And it's just really, it's very funny, some of this. The satire, especially when you understand the sort of political background to it as well. It's quite funny and stands up quite well. The mystery story sees him meet the Umbrias and their sworn enemies, the Rumbabas.
Really, that's the names.
Really goon show humour at this point.
Yeah.
Which is the excellent translation. I would never want to knock the word that Leslie Lonsdale Cooper and Michael Turner do with Tintin, because they translate a lot of the jokes and gags Hergé put in there was wordplay and Belgian colloquialisms and so forth. So some of the stuff was quite difficult to translate. They did such a good job. Mm. And I have to say, actually, some of this translates better than, I think, Asterix you can probably most closely associate this with. Mm. Actually, the work they do translating some of this actually works better in Tintin than it does in Asterix, although Asterix is a ton of wordplay and all the names and so forth.
Yeah.
Tintin meets Ridgewell, who's the only white man to be accepted into the Umbrias.
He looks a little bit like community. God.
He is God, we find out later on.
Don't do that. No, you're just saying stuff now to try and trick me.
Absolutely. The meeting with the Umbrias leads Tintin to realise that actually the original fetish had a diamond, which was kind of like the spirit of the forest
for him.
Inside it. However, he's come all this way to South America.
Mm-hmm.
He stumbles across some information on Ramon and Alonso.
Mm-hmm.
It takes him back to Europe.
How long does it take at this point to travel from?
It would have taken weeks.
Yeah.
So this story must span over months, almost. I think it may be a year if you think about all the action that happens in it. Whereby he gets back to Belgium.
Hmm.
And there seemed to be these idols everywhere with broken ears. So obviously the story became very popular. People were building lots and lots of these idols. Eventually he finds out where the original is. Strangely enough, it's been bought by an American who's on yet another boat on his way back to America. Ramon and Alonso have also found this out.
Hmm.
They're aboard the boat, attempt to steal the idol, at which point Tintin apprehends them. The idol breaks, the diamond falls into the sea, and all three of them fall into the sea in a tussle. And we see it's been a violent book the whole way through.
Yeah.
But in terms of a death in the Tintin book, I, as a kid, this kind of, when I first read it, kind of disturbed me a little bit.
Aww. That's a bit creepy.
It's, you actually see Ramon and Alonso being taken off by demons.
Yeah.
So what must be, I mean, it's not a really creepy hell, I mean, but it I just remember it really creeping out.
Where did they go? They went straight on down.
They went straight on down to the bottom of the sea. They drowned, they died, and they've clearly
gone to hell. Were they the worst of...
No, Rastapopoulos is easily the worst of Tintin's villains.
He
doesn't get the same sort of fate.
That's awful.
That's strange.
Once Tintin tells the American businessman the story of the idol, he agrees to give it back. It's put back together and returned to the museum. It is altruistic.
That's, I can tell just from the way you were talking about that, that you find that that story isn't one of your favourites, is it?
It's, if I say it's one of my least favourite Tintin books, that's like saying it's like one of my least favourite children.
It's like that, is it?
I love the Tintin books. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it again. However, it isn't. Were I to put them in a list of, you know, favourite at the top, least favourite at the bottom, that would come quite close to the bottom of the list of my Tintin books that I enjoy. I think it's possibly the most clumsy Tintin book in terms of the way the story's told.
Of all of them?
Of all of them. I think it's some of Hergé's least intelligent storytelling.
Mm.
Which I just feels like sacrilege coming out of my mouth.
And you just can't get around that blackface bit.
The blackface bit is really jarring, actually, as well. It's really unpleasant. There's some lovely bits in it. There's always lovely set pieces. The middle section of the story, where he's in San Theodoros, it is really good, and it's really funny. Satire. It's just the mystery that surrounds it. So the device that actually gets him to the part where you think, well, actually, the story Hergé wanted to tell was the story in South America. Mm. The mystery is just the device that gets him there.
And it doesn't really, he's not as sophisticated at disguising that as he is in later books.
No, definitely not. So the central section works beautifully. The mystery feels a little bit laboured. It's a very violent book as well. I noted when I was reading it, there's violent level of violence in there. I mean, you know, because these are children's books, aren't they? Yeah. Essentially, I don't think you'd get away with the level of gratuitous violence that you do. You know, there's shootings and stabbings and all sorts in there. It really is quite full on.
It was a less
obviously quite a gruesome death.
It was a simpler time when violence was more a part of everyone's lives.
More acceptable. People enjoyed violence a lot more.
People were getting shot and stabbed on the streets all the time. That never happens now.
Absolutely.
Sorry, I was just looking at Snowy's dialogue.
You love Snowy.
Yeah, Snowy's still very much the comic relief in there. It's pre-Haddock, pre-Thompson's. Yeah. So for the light relief, for the comic relief, Snowy is the device that Hergé uses when the story needs lighting up. And it does on occasion. It gets quite heavy with the violence. But the stuff with General Alcazar is quite enjoyable.
Like, there's just one panel where Tintin's stranded in the jungle. It was a jungle, wasn't it?
It was a jungle, yeah.
And he says, well, now I really am in a jam. No gun, no food, in hostile country, and all by myself. And so he goes, I don't count anymore, I suppose.
Yeah, he's quite an indignant little dog, isn't he?
Got a little strop on there.
Well, that would be a bit mean, though.
Yeah.
The parrot.
I like the parrot as well.
I agree, Gatwa!
He is, and certainly in the Nelvana adaptations, he's played to great effect. Interestingly, in the Nelvana cartoon adaptation, the death is not quite so gruesome. The violence is really dialed down. And actually, I'll be honest with you, I think their cartoon adaptation as a story,
this
is sacrilege, hangs together a little bit better than the actual book does.
I think that's probably all right. You obviously love the man.
I do, very much so.
We can acknowledge each other's faults. Does Jane have to pick the next one?
She does.
I'm starting to get confused as to which ones we've done.
We haven't done.
Yeah, I didn't think we did that one.
We haven't done that one, but don't choose it next. haven't done that one, that one, that one, and that one. That's two that you have to read together.
Mm-hmm.
That one, that one, that one, or that one.
Flight is 714.
Flight 714, yeah, no problem. Flight 714.
I really like the cover.
To Sydney, as it's called now. Funny, I've got, as I say, this is a magnet version from 87. At this point, it's still called Flight 714. If you buy it now, it's called Flight 714 to Sydney.
Is that to try and tap into the whole Lost thing?
I'll tell you when I review Flight 714 on my next Tintin bit. That's good. I fucking love Flight 714.
Excellent. Well picked, James.
I've read that one.
Thank you. Thanks, James.
I've read that shit like the
time. Story time is lovely.
Yeah, thank you.
You'd probably just do it now, couldn't you?
Well, I could, actually. It's
from memory.
Actually, one of the Tintin books I probably could do without actually having the reference with me or having to reread. I've read it not that long ago. Sorry.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, James. That was terrific.
Thank you for humouring me.
No, it's not humouring you. It's excellent. I like story time. It's a shame that you don't like that story as much, but I like it. The broken ear sounds like it should be
I like it, but then I'm framing it against the other Tintin books I'm talking about. I think putting it in context. Still great, still an enjoyable read, but in context to the other
it's
Tintin
books.
It's
like having an ugly child.
Yeah.
I got that. It's like having an ugly, untalented child.
I definitely wouldn't know about that, because my child is gorgeous, and she's probably going to be talented. Mm.
Probably, I think so. She can already kind of make cute faces.
She can draw.
She can draw. That's good.
Drawing,
She's pretty good at hip hop dancing.
And admin.
Yeah, and admin. She's very good at admin.
What are you guys doing this week? You're going to be looking at your baby.
I'm going to be letting my hair down because I break up for Christmas tomorrow.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so I'm going to be letting my hair down, whipping my hair about, or whatever.
Are you going to come out tomorrow night drinking?
We've already discussed this. I've already arranged to go out to workmates tomorrow night, unfortunately.
I get very confused between all of the people I talk to all the time.
I'm going out with my team.
We are going to go and visit our new niece, I believe, this weekend. I think that's what we're doing. She's very cute.
Exciting.
That's good. Good stuff. I don't know what we're doing next week, but hopefully, you know, it works out. I don't think it'll be as good as going and visiting my new niece. But it'll still be quite good, I'm sure.
Cute.
I am going to be wrapping presents.
You're going to be wrapping?
Yeah. And putting Christmas decorations up.
Oh, have you not put yours up yet?
No.
The dog keeps trying to eat them.
Yeah. I helped James's wife, Nicola, put the decorations on their tree.
You did trim our tree. It looks lovely.
Looks really good. James helped from the sofa, which was wonderful.
Did you not actually help?
No.
Do you hate it?
Yeah.
I find it a bit of a struggle, but we're still in the early part of our marriage.
Yeah.
And so I'm still making an effort.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll get to give up eventually.
I'm going to talk my boyfriend into going to see Tron this weekend as well.
Ooh, Tron.
I don't think he's keen on the idea of going on the opening weekend, but
to see a 3D film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I would quite like to see it at the cinema though. It's not showing anywhere in 2D. There's a few cinemas in the country, but obviously towards the end of the showings, they'll probably do in 2D.
It probably won't be that busy.
Do you know what? I think if you're going to see a film in 3D, actually, I think Tron potentially might be one.
I
suspect the 3D will work okay in Tron.
We were talking about this because I was looking for a cinema that was going to show in 2D, and because I'll be back in my home county next week, I was checking out the cinemas there. But I'm not fussed. I will go see it in 3D because I really want to see it.
I don't understand why people have got such a problem with 3D.
Isn't it funny how the two people you're talking about who maybe are slightly more reticent about 3D are both people who wear glasses?
I wear glasses.
I find it quite difficult.
It's probably the overuse of 3D. There's a lot of films that come out in 3D just for the gimmicky sake of it, and it costs a lot more.
I am pointing at the camera.
And especially if you've got children as well, and they want to go see all the children's films seem to come in 3D, that's going to cost a lot of money. And really, do all those films need 3D?
No, half of them don't.
Hollywood needs your money, man.
Apparently so.
Beat the fuckers. That doesn't need to be 3D. It isn't, but I'm just saying it probably doesn't. Actually, when I pointed at you, James, that was actually in 3D because we are in 3D.
I haven't got my glasses on, so it looked 2D to me.
Did it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Paper floating around in front of you. Ooh. Embrace the third dimension.
Nothing. Ooh. It's just flat.
Shut.
Oh, God, that worked.
There you go.
I think I might have voided my bowels.
Again? We voided our bowels when we were talking about Perry Bible Fellowship. Oh, God. I think that's your watching, Tron. You're doing whatever it was you said you were doing, and I'm seeing a baby.
Cool.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good, it folks. Is. Positivity.
Yes.
Go Team Mumcast.
Yeah. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Stop. This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend. It was the loveliest party that I've ever attended. If anything was broken, I'm sure it this is where the party ends. I'll just sit here wondering how you stand by your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you, you and your racist friend. This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend.
Short mystery story sandwiching a satirical farce. Segue between stories is clumsy. Last before war, darkest demise of any villain, violent themes throughout, unlikely to appear in modern children's literature, uncomfortable racial themes, but the tribe less so than Tintin's disguise.
Hmm.
Your love is disguise.
Okay.
Is that a guarantee? Oh,
that's all I've got to say about
I'm pretty
Winnie
sure
the
Disney
Pooh.
Won't let us put that.
Really? Fuck them. What have they ever done for us? What do Marvel... What do... Oh, I've caught that up.
Emperor's New Groove.
I was going to say, what do Disney do that we like? Because it was funny, because Marvel. But I don't read many Marvel books.
This is just going to go brilliantly.
Yeah. Should I caveat? I can't, everything I say, funny, because Marvel...
Oh, you're funny.
Thank
right,
you. You're going to put that on the end of this week's pod, and I'm going to hear me singing the Winnie the Pooh song, and just a massive wave of regret. It's going to cripple me when I listen to it.
No, maybe now I'll put that bit on.
Not as much as when I was doing the funny one. Yeah. Oh, bless you, darling.
Does this all sound okay? So
Whoopsie.
Stop sneezing, Dan.
I can do this.
Why'd you keep... I just moved it.
What?
It needs to be Mira Jane because she has a nice little lady voice.